This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online at WTKA.com. It is now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable here on a Thursday. We even have an extra guest sitting in for the moment. I don't think he's going to actually talk on the air during it, but we actually have an extra guest sitting in. My dad stopped by.
I mean, there's a seat open.
There's a seat open. And a microphone. He could join the conversation, but he generally pushes that away. Although, to be honest, I've actually had many, many, many requests to do like an hour with my dad and Craig. So,
oh boy.
Hey, all the two people on the planet.
hey, now. Don't insult my dad or yourself that way. That's why only I can insult my dad that way. Good morning to Brian Cook. How are you, Brian?
I don't know if that's an insult because Kurt Russell just left, so you guys might have it.
Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, whatever.
Kirk Russell's a lot younger than that. Kirk Douglas, 103.
Yeah, we can't talk politics, but he was a very courageous guy in his
He was Spartacus, life. Too.
He was Spartacus, yeah. And that...
Or as missing, everybody was Spartacus by the end of
everyone
it.
Everyone was Spartacus. And, I got confused.
And he gave a credit to the screenwriter, Dalton Trumbo, who had been blacklisted in Hollywood in the 50s. And Douglas was instrumental in making sure that didn't continue to happen.
Yeah, and Craig would know because Craig and Kirk Douglas went to high school together.
Yeah, we were in high school.
Also, Roadhouse is a great movie. Dirty Dancing. he had a lot of credits.
That was Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse.
So, okay, but Dirty Dancing was good.
Dirty Dancing is also Patrick Swayze. Goldie Hawn and you'll be okay.
What about Big Trouble, Little China?
Yes, there you go. All there right. You go. And here we are. I was waiting for the more you know moment here as we open things up here on the M Global. There we go.
Ask and you shall receive.
So, Tuesday. We're going to talk mainly about Tuesday here on the show. Basically,
Tuesday.
Tuesday was a really interesting day, needless to say.
Was it?
Tuesday was quite an interesting day. There was a basketball game Tuesday night.
What happened on Tuesday?
And prior to the basketball game on Tuesday, there was a retirement or whatever you want to call it. And so we're going to start with that. We'll get to the basketball part, but the Michigan State story is obviously a pretty big story. And it really started before the resignation. It started with Tony Paul's article about Mark D'Antoni and the accusations from Curtis Blackwell about NCAA violations and some other maybe irregularities. And while D'Antoni denies it, we all believe that expedited his
leaving.
Yeah,
it sounds like D'Antoni lied in his deposition in terms of running things through compliance. It seems like perhaps Michigan State was finding jobs for relatives of players they recruited, and these things weren't run through compliance. And I mean, I don't think the NCAA probably cares about it or cares much about anything these days, as far as I can tell. But I don't think that's, quote, legal under NCAA rules, and it may have some impact. And I don't know if it'll have any impact on whoever's coming into the job. I heard Rico's segment, which was interesting, and I know Comperoni has stated or reported that Fickell has the job, which seems not to be the case, at least yet. It certainly isn't the formal reality. But Rico named other guys who we thought were plausible, Moorhead, Chris Creighton, who to me is a Michigan fan. Those two guys are more worrisome to me than Luke Fickell. I don't know what you think, Brian.
Well, Fickell's recruited very well at Cincinnati, so that's something that would probably translate to Michigan State. I mean, the challenge for anyone who wants to take that job is who wants to follow probably the best coach in 50 years at Michigan State.
Oh, for sure.
After he both took that program to the heights they hadn't seen since college football integrated, and also just tanked them in the last 3 years, this recruiting class that they brought in is total garbage. The one right before it, not so hot. The reputation of the university is in the trash. Like, you're in a division with pretty much up-and-running versions of Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. I mean, That looks like three and out, no matter who takes that job. Because Michigan State fans are going to be like, why aren't you D'Antonio? And the coach is going to be like, well, he left me a bunch of Keebler elves. And so, I mean, that's a tough job. And, you know, we'll see if Luke Fickell is brave enough to take it. But we'll see.
Well, I mean, if I was Fickell, I wouldn't be enthusiastic because I think
their recruiting class is ranked higher than Michigan State's.
Right? Yeah, and I think Fickell is on line for maybe the Notre Dame job, which is a job that I know he covets, and that job is maybe a job that's open in the next couple of years. And
I don't know. Brian Kelly does well enough that you can't fire him.
Well,
I mean, it would take like one bad year for them to can him, I guess, but yeah. He does well.
To me, if I'm Luke Fickell, I'm not necessarily, and a lot of it is the timing. As Rico and I discussed, if D'Antonio, because he made the whole I'm going full circle thing, which based on how Brian described it, he did actually go full circle because he recreated the program from where he got it.
True.
So he kind of did go full circle. But when he said he was coming back for another year in November and into December, if he would had these thoughts that he claimed he had when he had his press conference, don't you actually step down in early December and give the program that you would the school you would allegedly love the chance to replace you and bring in a guy with the right timing for the recruiting class and to get things going as opposed to on the eve of signing day?
Well, he wanted his $4 million, right?
Of course he wanted that. And the rumors that he wanted to set Mike Tressel up for the job, but that they're not going to hire him unless they have no choice but to make him an interim for a year.
Well, they could have just given him his $4 million and then he could have
and said leave anyway.
Retired at the appropriate time. That makes me think that it really was Blackwell running this guy out of his job. Like, maybe he was just hanging on, but, like, that might have been the final straw because he didn't, like, if he can verify any of the things he put in his deposition.
Well, they claim to have a picture and an affidavit for the one about the going on a recruiting visit to a five-stars house. And so Sam and I actually addressed that a little bit yesterday. I don't know if I'm Fickell if I'd actually take the Michigan State job. There are a lot of people that I would be like, I don't know if I would take that job at this moment based on, as you said, three and out kind of scenario. If you have to really rebuild recruiting and really rebuild a program, if you're Luke Fickell, you're like, I have an easier chance to go to a New Year's Six game over the next 3 or 4 years at Cincinnati than I do at Michigan State. Sure. And I can parlay that into a better job than Michigan State, in theory.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, you're asking him to wait for like $2 later instead of grabbing $1 now, and people have reasons to do or not do that. But yeah, it's I think Michigan State is a deceptively tough job. Like someone was talking about PJ Fleck. PJ Fleck would be crazy to leave Minnesota for Michigan State.
They've invested in their facilities. Their stadium's fairly new. They've put a lot in. You're in the West,
not in the East.
Yeah, and that's the
number
beginning
one part,
of it. Yeah, it's like, okay, do you have to play Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State? You have to win two of those games to win the division.
I mean, heck, if I'm Fickell, I maybe look, well, there's a chance that over the next couple of years that you have an opening at Penn State because he gets a better job. Franklin's name keeps popping up at Florida State or USC and all the other places. Eventually, a big job's going to open up. He might leave. Wouldn't you rather be at Penn State than at Michigan State?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know it's really a rhetorical question.
But it's, yeah, for sure. And you know, I think Narduzzi has already turned the
job. He said no with a really poorly video editing job, but he did say no, and he's staying at Pittsburgh, so he's out of the...
I wonder if he knows that the Wolf of Wall Street is not an admirable figure.
Probably not.
Probably not, right?
Yeah, those are rookie numbers.
Yeah, Miz, we actually didn't bring that part of it up when you mentioned that you liked the video, and we say liked in air quotes.
Sure.
That... That's actually not a positive thing to...
Right, yeah.
I just thought it was funny.
It is funny.
So, if it's not Fickell, I mean, Creighton maybe. The Moorhead name was a real out-of-the-blue kind of name.
Internal hire.
I think in the end they're going to go with Tressel for a year, Mike Tressel for a year. And see how it goes.
Look at who the athletic director is. It's Bill Beekman.
Okay, so this is something that I learned. The athletic director at Michigan State does not hire the football coach.
What do you mean?
The board of trustees, it's not that they sign off on it. The board of trustees make the hire. They hire three athletic officials at Michigan State, the AD, the football coach, and the basketball coach. The trustees make the hire. The AD may run the search.
That's bizarre.
But the trustees are the ones. So he could go to them and say, I present you with and give a name. And they go, no, we want Pat Shurmur. And they go and hire Pat Shurmur. The trustees make the hire. And the whole thing with Beekman is hilarious because Beekman got the job because of who his boy is with.
All right,
Izzo
sounds
and D'Antonio.
Like I need to run for trustee of Michigan State University.
I think that would be a very amusing idea.
Brian Ellerbe for football coach. We can make this happen. Michigan fans can get together. We can keep running for trustee.
And take over the spots.
And we can hire whoever we want to be those people.
Yeah, I was reading this yesterday, and that's the way it was written by Michigan State people. I wasn't, getting in some rant. They, like, the football coach, the basketball coach, and the AD are hired by the board of trustees.
Do you want to be Michigan State's basketball coach?
I would like that.
We can make this happen.
It's kind of an odd power structure, isn't it?
Yes. But isn't everything about Michigan State an odd power structure?
Good point. Like, that's the thing to me. So Luke Fickell, who I think, just based on the surface of just what he built at Cincinnati, the kids that he has coming in, the ease of getting to a better bowl game, I would leave. But if you're – so look at the MAC coaches, because it would be a step up if you're Chris Creighton, if you're Jim McElwain, who – Jim McElwain actually likes Michigan, so he's not qualified for the job.
I don't think McElwain is even a vague possibility.
Please do that.
It isn't happening. But Chris Creighton would be a good choice for Michigan State, in my opinion. And Joe Moorhead, I don't know, but I'm not sure Joe Moorhead is going to take that job.
Yeah. I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at everything about the reputation of the school right now. I'm looking at the stuff that's leaking out from the issue with Curtis Blackwell, and I'm not sure that I'm looking at Michigan State right now. I do think that end up with an internal hire, but are they going to settle?
If you're Eastern Michigan, you're going to take the Michigan State job. Like, Moorhead might cool his heels, wait for a better opportunity.
That's what I say. If you're a Mid-American Conference coach,
but if you're Chris Creighton.
And you already have the ties.
You're going to take the
job. Yeah. If you're Chris Creighton, you should take the job.
And I mean ties by, like, his actual ties that he wears are green and white, but he actually has the recruiting ties in the region, too.
Well, he's making, like, $50,000 and some soup at EMU. Like, you take the job, right?
He actually is going to – and this will not be a topic of conversation. We're talking recruiting with him tomorrow as he talks about his signing day class, and I made it a point that I would not address this with him about this. I'm not – because this kind of goes with another question we asked Rico, and it's a – What is a coach supposed to say in November? When was the last time we got an honest answer from a coach in November?
When's the last time D'Antoni was honest about anything?
Touche.
I mean, like, he was talking about how he was going to stay, and then he screws off day before signing day. That entire recruiting class, as terrible as it is, was thought that he was going to be their coach, and no, he's not. And that's just part of being D'Antonio. You have a square jaw, you're a little publicly religious, and people fall all over themselves talking about a great dude you are. Doesn't matter how many of your guys go to jail and get immediately back on the field afterwards. It's amazing. And he pulled the wool over everybody's eyes until he screwed up by going too hard in the paint with Austin Robertson and the three guys who got expelled for raping a girl. And you can't understate the fact that he got a free pass from a captive media. The Michigan State beat and the Ohio State beat are 1 and 2 in, like, the worst, most bootlicking sports beats in the country. It's disgusting to me. And he got away with it, made Michigan State's campus a lot more dangerous because he got to win some football games. And it's just a sad commentary on that university.
Yeah, I mean, well said. And, I've always found D'Antonio to be an incredible hypocrite. A lot of Bible belting, pasting over the realities of what his program became. And so I'm not a fan of D'Antonio. I think Michigan State will be better without him. And
I was looking forward to having him around for another couple of years to beat the brakes off him, because that's what's going to happen next year, no matter who's the coach there. Yeah. Rocky Lombardi starting quarterback, is that what's going to happen?
I kind of thought he made his decision to leave about 30-something to whatever the score was late in the third quarter in the Michigan game.
Why don't you just, like, if that's the case, then announce it then, and you get, like, a victory lap, and everybody like, But
school he loves, and he leaves him this way.
Yeah, it really does look like he got run by Curtis Blackwell.
Did you guys happen to read this article on USA Today, For the Win, by Michelle Martinelli?
I did, yeah.
I had to look up who she was because I wanted to know what her background was, like, to know, like, what their biases are. Yeah. She worked for State News. She is an MSU alum. She went to Medill after, but she's an MSU alum. And there's one paragraph in here in particular. I'll read this before we get to the break, because I think this is a terrific terrifically worded paragraph. Not only does D'Antonio's departure come as the program is falling back into the dismal pit he once carried it out of, Michigan State has had back-to-back 7-6 seasons, but he also either helped create a toxic environment marred by controversy or idly watched it unfold during his 13-year tenure, not to mention that his exit strategy is questionable at best and pathetic at worst. I thought that was a really well-written paragraph.
Yes.
There you go.
And now we just wait to see who they hire and... Then we'll talk about it then. It's going to be a real interesting search, and thankfully, we're not involved in a search. Those things get very tiresome very quickly. I'm curious how quick this will actually happen and see who they land on. And maybe I should be more scared of them hiring Luke Fickell. I know he's a good recruiter, but he doesn't seem to be. There are names out there that would actually be guys that I would be a little more nervous about them hiring. But as Brian said, it's going to take a few years for them to really build that thing back up anyway. So
I think whoever is going to get the job is going to get at least 6 years probably, because the next two are not promising.
It's a lot of patience for a college football fan base, that's for sure. Time to talk basketball here on the Michigan Insider. Or back to basketball on Sports Talk 1050. WTK, the ticket, online at WTK.com, as we have Brian Cook and Craig Ross here for the MGO Blog Roundtable. And as we were talking during the break, Craig went back. You watched the replay of the Ohio State game twice?
Twice. I watched it afterwards in regular time, and then I watched it yesterday mostly in slow motion. It's brutal. It's, as Billis was right, it's not really a basketball game. It was a something.
So
not
can
quite
you pull takeaways? Like, what are your takeaways from a game when you realize that the game that you were supposed to see never actually happened because they missed about 25 foul calls?
Yeah, it just was a different game. And you don't know what to say about it with guys getting shoved all over and pushed. And Michigan too. I mean, this wasn't a case where the officiating was completely one-sided.
Correct.
Both teams got away with a lot. It was just that the calls in the end that hurt Michigan were sort of curious. And in the big picture on this game was, of course, Michigan just doesn't shoot the ball. They're 10 of 31 from three, which is dreadful. Well, not dreadful, not good. But they were 10 of 29 from two, which is dreadful.
And when you're missing as many shots as they are, Brian, shouldn't they maybe take a few fewer of those threes? I know some of them were wide open, really good looks, but
what are they going to do? They're going to drive into the lane and get knocked over and try to put up.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way that game is officiated, I don't know what they were supposed to do, because Franz Wagner goes to the basket, gets bumped, nothing happens, and so maybe the three, even if you can't shoot threes, is the best shot. So it's different rules when you've got – and I'm not going to get on someone for taking a wide-open three. It doesn't matter if it's falling or not, unless it's Teske a little bit, because Teske has got a long track record as a guy who's sub 30%. Like, Franz needs to keep shooting, because Franz, last year in Europe, I think he had about 150 attempts across various competitions, shot 38% from the FIBA line, a 90% free throw shooter, and those are –
tend to correlate.
And those two correlate. So, whatever the wrist thing happened, or if he's just his mechanics are off or whatever, he needs to keep shooting and shoot through that, because at some point he's going to be a quality three-point shooter. So you need him to keep taking those shots. Eli's best from behind the line. He needs to keep taking those shots even if he's missing them. Johns is actually hitting a bunch lately. So most of the shots that went up, I think you got to take. So there's not really anything wrong with what Michigan's doing. It's just they got to hit some freaking shots, which has been their whole 2020, right? So through the end of November, they were 332nd in three-point percentage, and they were 332nd in defensive three-point percentage, and those are two of the least controllable things over short spurts in basketball. I think there's a reason that Michigan's offense isn't very good at shooting threes. Are they that bad? No. And then the defensive thing makes absolutely no sense, because Michigan is one of the best teams in the country at preventing threes from going up. And usually, if there's a correlation, that means that those threes that go up are worse. So Michigan was better than only one team in January in that three-point gap, and that's Incarnate Word. And whenever you're just above Incarnate Word, that's bad news.
Hey, my friend works at Incarnate Word down in San Antonio.
Really?
So I was actually just talking about them the other day.
You should call them up and express remorse for their three-point gap.
Some real three-point woes down there.
It feels like this is just a year where, randomness has bitten us than almost any other year. And
let's go back 2 years. Yeah. Michigan makes the tournament. They're in the second round. They get a buzzer beater from Jordan Poole. The rest of their bracket
falls apart,
immolates, and Michigan goes to the Final Four. They get Loyola Chicago in a national semifinal. This is payback for that. that was Lady Luck coming in and being like, ding dong, there you go. And now the dark ritual that we used to make that happen is extracting its cost.
So Sister Jean's pendulum swung the other direction, essentially.
And it's mystifying to me, though, because I think, and I've said it before to some derision, not just on this show, but from people who I've bumped into, I thought the officiating has actually been pretty good in the Big Ten in basketball for the last decade. And I expressed that. And then
I think we just came up with Craig's new craziest idea that he's come up with.
No, I mean, I think there's something to the idea that after the verticality was inserted, mm-hmm. that, you know, you were able to challenge, and if someone bumped into you, they didn't get the call. And I thought that was a big improvement.
Yeah, great. I agree completely. And I think there have been some rule changes in basketball that made sense and made it a better game. And you could win a game on the road in the Big Ten. The last 10 years, you didn't have to win. In the old days, you had to win by 20 or 30 points to have a chance on the road. And so it seemed like things were getting better. And now some of the same officials who I think thought have been pretty good over the last decade are now wretched. And I'm not quite sure what in the world, at least in Michigan games, but not just Michigan games, I've been watching other games. For example, and something happened in this game, and this was a key call, and no one has really referenced it that I saw, is that in the second half, Teske frees himself in the paint, gets the ball, is going to have a layup. Now, who knows if he'll make it, but it will be an uncontested layup. And they call him for 3 seconds. So I went back when I watched the tape, and yeah, he was in the lane 4 seconds. Right call. Late in the game, we're up two, and what's his name? Wesson is fighting against, I think, Teske in the post. I think it's not Austin at that point. He's fighting he's in the lane from 110. Go back and look at the tape. He's in the lane from 110 to 102. 8 seconds. The same ref, Karstensen, staring at it.
He's dreadful.
I know, he was dreadful. Lets it go. 8 seconds. And then he finally gets the ball as he comes out of the lane, and you're up two. You don't dig at the post up two with a minute to go in the game. Well, they dig at the post. They kick it out. The guy makes a three, and then we get the crazy, I don't know what you call that call at the end of the game. One that Jeff Schiller, M. Hoops one, who's a good commentator on basketball, said he's never seen and never will see again. And I think that's right. That was just wacky.
Yeah. Let's just pile all the crap into this year.
Yeah, and get it out of the way.
And then we can get move forward in the final year, four and move forward down the road at some point.
Yeah, let the basketball gods get back on your side in your good graces for next season. Here's another basketball question. You went back and you watched the game twice, and I have not had a chance to go back, and probably because it was so ugly I couldn't get my eyes to watch it for a second time or a third time. Brandon Johnson had one shot in the second half. I know he had foul trouble, so I understand that fouls were a limiting factor. And I understand the way the game was played, there were some limiting factors at times. But Brandon Johnson, the way he played the previous two games, had, I think it was 8 points in the game. He had like six shots or something five. Like the five shots.
Five shot equivalents.
Yeah, and he had one shot in the second half. He's got to get more touches, right? He has to go hunting. They've got to find a way to get, especially while Livers is out, he has to be more active and more aggressive. They have to be more active and aggressive getting him looks.
Well, I mean, he's had a couple games where he's established himself as a guy you got to pay attention to. We haven't seen what it looks like when people are paying attention to him.
Right.
So that's a process for anyone, and it might be more of a process for Johns, who has some pretty well-documented off-season struggles with confidence. So if he's got an open three, it now seems that he's confident he's going to be able to take it. But, you know, imposing his will on a game is another level beyond that he's probably going to have to work on getting to.
Yeah, I mean, I have a slightly different feel about that. I mean, in the Nebraska game, Johns had 16 points on 10 shot equivalents, which is terrific. He had 7 rebounds. In the Rutgers game, 20 points on 15 shot equivalents, again, terrific, 7 rebounds. Played a really nice game with a couple of assists, a steal, a block. And I don't think he played that badly in this game. And I sort of like the fact He had 8 points on 5 shots, which is, again, good. He just didn't shoot it a lot. But I like the fact that he's not taking bad shots. The worst thing you do on a basketball court is turn the ball over.
Yeah, but
the second worst thing you do is take a garbage shot.
You know, at some point, Michigan is getting up garbage shots. And, like, someone has to create better shots than that. And in a game where Xavier Simpson isn't doing a lot of that and John Teske is doing none of it, like,
Well, yeah, but the problem is, Brian, neither Teske nor Johns is a shot creator. That just, I mean,
Teske has been creating shots for himself on the block semi-regularly this year and didn't get a good shot up at all in this game.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, Austin Davis is a better low post player. Just that Austin Davis doesn't play any defense. He can't. It's not his. He's not trying. I mean, he just.
He's just got cement shoes.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And but Austin, you know, somebody taught him. I think his dad, Young, good footwork because he has very good footwork and is a good low post player. He just on the defensive end, he struggles. Teske is sort of the opposite. A much better athlete, more instinctive, but doesn't have any. And his low post footwork isn't good.
And so he's not going to be, Luka Garza, he's not going to be a 30% usage guy, but he's been one of the higher percentage usage guys on the team. And then what was he in this game, like 0 for 3 from the floor?
The Teske was like 1 for 7, I think. He was like 1 for 7. He was a terrible numbers in the game.
He missed a couple of shots, point blank.
Yeah. I know he missed the threes, but I think it was like 1 for 4 from two. I think that from two and like over.
Yeah,
three.
One exactly 1 for 7, 0 for 3 from three. So you know, not good.
So
from two, one for four.
When that happens, you want to see someone else who might be able to do a little bit, or get more aggressive. It's a hard mentality to suddenly. Get into sort of like this is my team, I'm the man. That's a process.
Yeah, and the foul trouble did obviously impact. And there were a couple of times where he cut the ball where I thought he had if he just catch and shoot, he was ready. But didn't seem like he was ready to actually for that part of it.
Yeah,
and maybe it was too early in the offensive set. I'm not really sure. But as you said, they end up with some bad shots by the end of a set.
Well,
maybe be ready a little
one
earlier.
One thing is so Michigan's not shooting well from three. They get gun shy, and then you got guys like DeJulius and Brooks. Driving off closeouts.
Those floaters.
Turn into anything good. They turn into floaters from the baseline, which were they hitting 20% of those this year? So, even if you're not shooting well, you shouldn't, if you're a 5'11" guard without a lot of lift, that's your shot. And if it doesn't go down, eventually you won't play, but the floater isn't going to do anything for you. So, Michigan needs a infusion of athleticism and size base in the backcourt very, very badly. Mm-hmm. Josh Christopher, come on down, hopefully.
That's why Sam's in L.A., not to recruit him, but to go cover him, because there's a good likelihood that he will pick Michigan when all is said and done.
So, and Zeb 6'3 has some bounce, so
Zeb Jackson is a very athletic guy. I'm not sure what his position is, but he's very athletic.
So Michigan, we have the tournament in the Bahamas, and it's like, ooh. But now, especially without Livers, the limitations of this roster are very, very apparent, which is why I'm kind of keeping an even keel here, because, best case scenario for this team is, you make the second round of the tournament, you put up a good fight in a 8-1 game or something. They're not as good as they showed in the Bahamas, and I don't think that has anything to do with anything other than the fact that, the roster got decimated so badly that Beeline was like, I'm going to take the Cavs job. So,
they're not constituted to lose Isaiah Livers for an extended period of time. It's way too much scoring and athleticism and everything else that he brings
to
this team.
They have no bench.
Right.
They have very little bench even when Livers is available and when he's gone. How many perimeter minutes did Michigan get from bench players in this game?
Not much.
You got a little bit from DeJulius, but not a ton. They're playing 2 7-footers at times because they don't have a backup at the four. You have to play Franz at the four, even when you're playing against a team that's too big to really play Franz at the four.
Yeah, there's these lineups where it's like Johns is on the bench. So you're like, who on earth is? Oh, that's right, we don't have anybody else. So
yeah, that's right. The I'm not quite that pessimistic because assuming Isaiah comes back. I'm real happy having a 6-guy rotation with seven on.
This is his dream scenario.
Yeah. And so, and to some extent, it's why I think
you have a 6-guy rotation, that means your 7th guy sucks.
But that's okay as long as your 6 guys aren't in.
One team, it was a Carolina team that had Mokhtar, who played here and then transferred to Carolina. Right. They had 6 guys on that team. They won the national championship.
Right.
But that's because they had like 4 first-round draft picks.
Well,
and Mokhtar was the sixth man, and they had enough versatility amongst everybody else.
Well, you go back to the games in the Bahamas, and they won those games because they really shot it. And one of the reasons why they really shot it was Livers. And Eli also played well in those games. So, and what you've got now that you didn't have then is a Brandon Johns who's sort of coming along. And so if you've got Livers playing 35 minutes a game, which he certainly can do, and you've got a Johns on the bench who can spell guys up front, maybe all of a sudden you can beat Gonzaga again. I mean, can Michigan beat Gonzaga again with Livers and a better Johns?
So
the answer is yes.
Philip Petrushev was 3 of 15 in that game.
Okay.
So that's their big star center, and you go into that game and you come off Teske's junior year, and that happens, and you're like, all right, here we go. And since that game, Teske has been essentially lit up by any half-decent big.
That's fair. That's true.
And I don't know what's going on there. I mean, it's inexplicable to me, but his regression is clear, and it's a big problem for Michigan. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what happened. It is extremely concerning that, you know, every center who goes up against Teske who's not Nebraska's center has been giving him the business, and that seems like too long of a trend to be anything other than the near future.
That's a completely reasonable and fair commentary.
It's a bad year to have this many good bigs in the Big
but
Ten.
But I still don't want to give up hope. I mean, because it strikes me that if Isaiah gets healthy and Teske does sort of revert, which doesn't seem impossible, this could be a team. I'm not saying they're a national championship team, but this is a team that could compete well in the NCAAs because they've competed against that quality of team. And if you look at their losses this year in the Big Ten, they're all, you know, with the exception, I think, of Michigan State on the road, every single one of these games was a game they could have won. I mean, they were all close. They had weird officiating. They had just weird stuff happen over and over and over. So I'm not sure they're going to make the tournament, but I'm not sure that this is a team you want to count out. Then, you know, remember the year, was it the year where we were after the Ohio State game where everyone had given up? We were like 14-9. Do you remember what year that was? We ended up going on a run. And winning most everything the rest of the year after that game. So I'm not sure they can't get there.
Brian Cook and Craig Roster here to wrap things up as we head towards the weekend. Big game coming up, Craig, on Saturday at noon at Chrysler Center. Two teams coming off of what both would describe as disappointing home losses on Tuesday, Michigan versus Michigan State. Both these teams seem to have, and Rico was talking about it the way they close out some of their games, but both these teams seem to have some offensive struggles either at times or more consistently than just at times.
Yeah, well, I was saying in the break that the Rutgers game was disappointing to me because, from two points of view. One is we got killed on the offensive boards. We turned it over, and somehow Rutgers got 36 more shots than Michigan, something I've never seen, 83-47. And yet Michigan and was up by 14 and then decided they were going to turn it over seven times in the last 8 minutes to let Rutgers make a Rutgers team that can't shoot the ball at all make a run in the game. So I don't know where Michigan's at right now. I want to be optimistic. I'm hoping that we get Livers back Saturday, but I have no real reason to believe he will be back. I just don't know. And I fear without Livers, this team doesn't have enough firepower and really just can't win this sort of a game. I don't know what you think, Brian.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I think. Okay. I mean, this is we're just waiting for Livers to get back and hoping Michigan is able to scrape into the tournament. That's where I'm at right now, and it's fine. It's been a snake bit year. You know, everything that could possibly have gone wrong has gone wrong. So that's what we're living through.
I had a conversation with Glenn on Twitter, who's the fan of the player and the fan. And he, it was a few weeks ago, and I had brought up the 14-15 team. That's the one that lost Karras and Derek Walton for all those, for all that. And obviously, so snake bitten team, right? That was going into the game against Nebraska, where you also without X, so you're thinking about without two key players. Mm-hmm. He brought up the team that was the 90-91 team, not in the context of being snake bitten, but as much as that team having lost Glenn Rice 1 year earlier and then all the guys off lost to Loyola Marymount. So you had Demetrius Caleb and you had Eric Riley and you had that group, James Michael Talley, James Voskler, and Rob Pelinka. You had that crew of players that
they weren't a very good team that year. Obviously, coming off of a year the year before where they were as high as number four in the country. But that year, that was not a very good season, laid the foundation for the leadership and the core that would welcome in the Fab Five the next couple of years, and having veterans on the bench around the Fab Five. And he was bringing it up in the context of, if Juwan can finish off the class, you mentioned Josh Christopher's name, you could have a core of veterans that come back next year that are around this really talented freshman class. So I actually started thinking about how there could be some parallels a little bit between the 14-15 season, some parallels between the 90-91 season. And I guess we can all hope that the follow-up to it as far as the successes on the court is what happens. But let's hope that we don't have the same end of a season snake bitten the way that they had it in 14-15. Because that season was even more difficult to watch at times, or a lot of times, than this one. A lot of minutes for Andrew Dockich, I think, was the biggest problem. A lot of minutes for Andrew Dockich.
Well, I mean, he went to Ohio State the next year, and he played like 20 minutes a game for them. So
no, this was only his sophomore year. It was a couple years later. Oh, he went to Ohio State, but yeah.
But they,
point, I mean, stands.
He got a ton of time for that Ohio State team, and they made the tournament, didn't they? But
they had the player of the year in Giap, but yes.
That's true. So it's, people are trying to get mad about stuff, and I'm just like, dude, this is a lot of shots that aren't going down, but they're open, and the opponents are winning games sometimes because they're hitting just straight trash, and that's a good sign for down the road. You know, if Michigan is getting systems that get them open shots and prevent the opponent from getting open shots, and then they add guys who are really good at basketball, which they appear to be doing, then, you know, you're going to have a good time down the road. So just be patient, sim to end of the season, and we'll see what happens.
Wow. Brian Cook, the voice of reason.
I'm always the voice of reason.
I bet, you know, no, but you're the voice of reason on this.
I'm usually the voice of reason.
Usually the voice of reason.
That's a very tempered response. And in fact, that's probably how people should be responding, but sports fans are pretty volatile, so you have the extremes that happen. And when you're losing in other sports, you know, if you lose a football game and then you play a basketball game a few days later and you don't look good, people carry their angst from one sport into the next, so it does happen.
It's funny how hockey and basketball are exactly the same this year. So they don't have enough talent, both teams. They're both snake-bit. Michigan's hockey is shooting like 5.8%, which is incredibly low.
Yeah, because they've had some really good chances that
partially the guys who are, they don't have like a sniper on the team or anything, but like they should be doing a little bit better than they are based on their fundamentals. They're winning possession in a lot of games, they're out shooting the opponent by a large margin, and they're still just kind of stuck in the mud, and next year's recruiting class promises to change that, but the two programs are in exactly the same spot. So I'm just like, everybody don't be mad, chill out, just wait a year and we'll see how it goes then. If things are still going badly, all right, we'll get a little ornery.
So what he's saying is relax, enjoy, and baseball season's right around the corner.
Yeah, baseball's coming. It should be a really good baseball year for Michigan. And softball's always interesting.
They start tomorrow.
Yeah. They start, where do they
start?
They
start
open?
Tomorrow in Tampa.
In Tampa.
They start tomorrow.
Do you know
Tampa
who
this
they
morning.
Open?
Georgia State and somebody else. They play Florida on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They play USF on Saturday before they come back after
Speaking
game Sunday.
Of Florida, women's hockey, women's tennis team won.
Yeah, they
won
a shutout on Tuesday. Yeah,
they shut Florida out on Tuesday. So there was some good thing.
Yeah, two ranked teams, Michigan number 10. I saw that result when I came in.
And they are, they've got two super recruits coming in, Corwin Brown's daughter, who is a top 15 tennis player in the United States, and Katrina Miller from Ann Arbor, who's also a top 15 tennis player, and two of their better players are both will be sophomores next year. So not only will basketball and hockey have an infusion of good young players next year, but you'll see it in tennis, and they've got
coming next week a UFR on Michigan tennis on MGo Blog.
I want to next week I'll talk about men's tennis, which is also, you know, if you haven't seen
they're good. We do have to get out of here, guys. We're gonna squeeze in Jake real quick before we get out of here. Jake, how are you, Jake?
I just want to say, people, you just gotta hang in there. This is just Juwan's first year. I remember I looking at Beeline. He was 10-22 in the first year, so we just gotta be patient. The future is bright. What a great day to be a Michigan football, basketball, baseball, softball, tennis, golf, swimming. One game, one play, one moment at a time. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue, win or lose. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
Thank you, Jake. Appreciate the call. We'll be right back.
did better than